The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop, looking out over London.
Good night, and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Here we go again. It's a good song and all, but I wish I didn't have to play it so often. Welcome to a new show. It's Thursday. I'm Nicole Sandler here at NicoleSandler.com and on the Progressive Voices Network. And yeah, we're talking about yet another mass shooting. Last night in Thousand Oaks, California, inside a bar where it was college night, a gunman went in and shot up the place. If they said that they knew why, if there was a motive, I'm unaware of it. Just none of it makes any sense. But I know that I woke up at about 4 o'clock in the morning, as I tend to do these days, and flip on the TV, and sure enough, they're on the scene in Thousand Oaks. And they were talking at the time about 11 people shot that included those who were killed, and they weren't giving out numbers yet. It was still too early on the scene. 4 o'clock here, it was 1 o'clock there. The shooting happened, I think, at around 11:30 or so. It's just devastating. 13 people are dead. 11 people who were there at the bar, for college night, plus a cop, the first one on the scene, who was like a 29-year veteran of the police force and looking forward to retiring next year, who was killed. In fact, the shooter went in, and there was a bodyguard, I guess, a guy at the door with a gun. He was armed. He was the first person killed. So there were 11 patrons, one police officer, and the killer, they believe, took his own life before the cops got through. Or I guess, well, some cops were already there, but they found his dead body in an office right off the front entrance to the bar. I don't know what else there is to say anymore. Trump certainly lied after the Parkland shooting. He said he was going to do something about it. He's done nothing. And if you believe anything Trump says, I've got some swampy land not too far from here that I can sell you for a really good price. It's just sickening. So that happened while the rest of the world seems to be falling apart. I do have some really important news for my fellow Floridians. There's so much going on. More ballots are coming in, mostly from Broward County, where I'm sitting, where I live, the biggest Democratic bastion, not only in Florida, but one of the bluest counties in the state, where there are a lot of anomalies in the counting. For some reason, a lot of people allegedly voted for the governor's race, but didn't register a vote in the Senate race. They just don't make any sense. But even with what makes sense, the difference between the two candidates is shrinking. So in the Senate race, it's less than 0.25%. The difference between Rick Scott and Bill Nelson is less than a quarter of a percentage point, which triggers a hand count, a manual recount. So that's going to happen in the Senate race, although they do need to figure out what happened to about 30,000 votes out of Broward County that the machines are saying people didn't register a vote in the Senate race, which is nonsense. The race for agriculture commissioner, the Democrat, is a woman named Nikki Fried, who was behind by such a small margin. And today she overtook the margin. She's 500 votes ahead of her Republican opponent at this point. That will also be a manual recount because it's less than 0.25 percentage points difference that triggers a manual recount. Now, the governor's race between Andrew Gillum and Ron DeSantis, who we affectionately refer to as Ron DeRacist, they had been just a little bit more. It was 0.52%. So just over a half a percentage point difference. And the cutoff for a recount, a machine recount, which really doesn't do much, but that comes up at a half a percentage point. So they were 0.2 of a percentage point apart, and this morning they closed that gap. And so the lead that DeSantis now has over Gillum is 0.47%. So less than half a percentage point. That means if Gillum's people demand a recount, they have to give them a recount. Now, Gillum's people, for some reason, he conceded on election night. I don't think that makes a difference. If it comes down to what the ballots say. And if the numbers are so close that it triggers a recount, you get the recount. But Gillum's people are going to have to ask for it, and I think they will. I don't see anything official yet, but again, they crossed that half a percentage point threshold today, and they're now within the margin that triggers a recount. Florida might come through after all. You never know. But here's the other deal. A lot of people, you know, if you got purged off a voting list or something happened and you were given a provisional ballot when you went to vote, you need to get in touch with the supervisor of elections office before 5 p.m. today. So you've got just under 2 hours. So if you're hearing me, you live in Florida, you got a provisional ballot. Oh, my God. You need to get your driver's license, your voter registration card, whatever IDs you have, passport, and head on down to the supervisor of elections office before 5 o'clock. If you can prove who you say you are, your provisional ballot can be counted. You need to make sure your vote is counted because it's that close. So contact the supervisor of elections office immediately before this 5 o'clock deadline. Now, if you have any questions, you can call the voter protection hotline. That number is 833-868-3352. Got it? 833-868-3352. 3352. Meanwhile, a lot of us today are planning to take to the streets this afternoon because, as the as the website says, nobody is above the law. That's where I want you to go. Nobodyisabovethelaw.org. That's going to take you to a joint page. It's moveon.org. It's indivisible. It's just probably every Democratic or progressive organization you can think of as working together on this. They've basically had a game plan set to go when Trump did something to undercut the Mueller investigation. We didn't know what was going to happen. We didn't know if he was going to fire Mueller, if he was going to fire Rod Rosenstein, if he was going to fire Jeff Sessions, or maybe all of the above. But of course, it did happen yesterday, less than 24 hours after the midterm elections polls closed. Boy, nothing obvious there, dump. Donald Trump, I was going to say fired Jeff Sessions, and in all honesty, he did. He was asked to submit his resignation, and Jeff Sessions made it very clear that he was only resigning because he was asked to by the president. He said, "Per your I keep doing this. I keep paraphrasing what he said." I don't even have it written down here, but basically he said, per your request, I'm submitting my resignation. Jeff Sessions didn't want to leave. He put up with being shat upon by this asshole of a president for a year and a half or more without quitting. I mean, he's been kicked in the gut, in the face, in the jaw, in the, you know, teeth by this president. And he still, he'd go to work every day, doing his job as attorney general. Well, no more. No more. There's a lot of stuff going on today. Now, I know it's Thursday and you're thinking, great, Howie Klein will be here. I forgot when I told you yesterday that Howie would be here today, that he's taking a little post-election time off, much deserved, because he works his ass off during election time. So in his stead today, I've got a great substitute. Marcy Wheeler will be here. Marcy Wheeler, of course, of EmptyWheel.net, who reports about national security and civil liberties and all important things like that. And she's been covering, you know, the Sessions firing and all that. And so she'll give us her expert opinion on what happened and what happens going forward, because we are sort of in uncharted territory. We really are, unless, you know, you've got a really good memory of the Nixon years and the Watergate days. Something happened. It was the anniversary of something having to do with Watergate the other day, and I realized it was like, I was 10 years old. So my memory of that time is not great. I forget what channel, the History Channel is running a 3-night or 5-part series on Watergate. We started watching a little bit last night, and it just hits too close to home. Anyway, now that Donald Trump has sort of pulled the trigger on upending the Mueller investigation, it's time for us to take action. So all these groups got together, and months ago, when it became apparent that this was going to happen, they put together a game plan for a protest to mobilize the resistance, right? And so it was called yesterday. So let me just read to you a little bit from the website, TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org. You can also get there at NobodyIsAboveTheLaw.org. We don't discriminate. It says, protest called for Thursday, November 8th, 5 p.m. local time. Donald Trump has installed a crony to oversee the special counsel's Trump-Russia investigation, crossing a red line set to protect the investigation. By replacing... but they got this wrong. It says by replacing Rod Rosenstein with just named acting attorney general Matt Whitaker, special counsel. I see. Robert Mueller's boss on the investigation. Trump has undercut the independence of the investigation. Whitaker has publicly outlined strategies to stifle the investigation and cannot be allowed to remain in charge of it. The Nobody's Above the Law Network demands that Whitaker immediately commit to not assume its supervision of the investigation, which we know that he's not going to do, right? Our hundreds of response events are being launched to demonstrate the public demand for action to correct this injustice. So if you go there, there are more than 900 events planned around the country. This afternoon at 5 o'clock local time, whenever it's 5 o'clock in your neck of the woods, that's what time these events are happening. Again, there's over 900 of them. You can find them at nobodyisabovethelaw.org. put in your zip code. It'll tell you all the events that are scheduled for your area. Get out there. We need to show that we're all in this together. All right. So Marcy Wheeler will be along in a little while. Before we get that, there's a lot of news to report on. So it's time for What's News.
I read the news today. Oh, boy.
Oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, Americans awoke this morning to the news of yet another mass shooting. This time, 13 people are dead after a gunman barged into a bar in Southern California and started firing. The shooter is dead as well. The tragedy happened at the Borderline Bar and Grill in Thousand Oaks as they were hosting a college night. People who were dancing dropped to the floor and hid behind chairs and counters in stunned silences. Others jumped over chairs and broke windows to get out. A sheriff's deputy was the first on the scene, and he's among the dead.
There are 11 victims. I will not count the suspect as a victim, the suspect, and then Sergeant Helis.
So 11 victims.
11 victims, the suspect makes 12, and Sergeant Helis makes 13. Sergeant Helis was on the force for 29 years. Was looking to retire in the next year or so. He was a Moore Park resident and is survived by his wife and his son. It's a horrific scene in there. There is blood everywhere, and the suspect is part of that, and I didn't want to get that close and disturb the scene and possibly jeopardize the investigation.
That's Ventura County Sheriff Jeff Dean. This morning, the body of the downed policeman was being transported to the coroner's office, and people were lined up on the freeway overpasses to, just to be there for this officer. It's just tragic, and it should not happen. By the way, and this is related, Republican Karen Handel conceded her race yesterday to first-time candidate Democrat Lucy McBath. She's an anti-gun violence advocate who jumped into the race at the last minute, citing February's mass shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School here in Parkland, Florida, that left 17 people dead. Now, Lucy McBath's 17-year-old son, Jordan Davis, was fatally shot in 2012 by a man who had argued with the teen and his friends about loud music coming from their car. Karen Handel finally conceded. She wrote in a Facebook post, "After carefully reviewing all of the election results data, it is clear that I came up a bit short on Tuesday." You might remember that Karen Handel only got that seat about 18 months ago when she beat John Ossoff in that special election that was the most expensive House election on record. Karen Handel is now out, replaced by anti-gun activist Lucy McBath in Georgia, where there are cities where it's mandatory to own a gun. She won. That's good news. Well, Wednesday afternoon, yesterday, less than 24 hours after Democrats won control of the House of Representatives, Donald Trump did what we were afraid he was going to do. He fired Attorney General Jeff Sessions. Not that I have a problem with Jeff Sessions not being the Attorney General, but we know the only reason we want to keep him there was because he recused himself was not overseeing the Mueller investigation. Well, in firing Jeff Sessions, the White House sets up a potential constitutional showdown over Robert Mueller's probe into the Trump campaign involvement in Russian interference in the 2016 elections.
It's the end of a slow-motion fall for Jeff Sessions leaving office tonight, the man who was the first U.S. senator to endorse and campaign for Donald Trump.
This isn't a campaign. This is a movement.
As Attorney General, Sessions was a loyal Trump soldier.
And we wholeheartedly join in the priorities of President Trump.
But in a letter today addressed to the president, Sessions says, "At your request, I am submitting my resignation." Sessions' ouster was inevitable. He was the target of blistering criticism from President Trump.
Therefore, I have recused myself
over his decision to recuse himself from overseeing the Russian election meddling investigation because he campaigned for Trump. The Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein, took on the job of supervising the Russia investigation and has been consistently supportive of the special counsel, Robert Mueller. President Trump today appointed an acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, a former U.S. attorney in Iowa in the George W. Bush administration, and until today, Sessions' chief of staff. Whitaker will now oversee the Russia investigation, taking it over from Rosenstein. When he was a conservative commentator for CNN, Whitaker was wary of giving the special counsel too much power and said the Russia investigation could be throttled back.
So I could see a scenario where Jeff Sessions is replaced with a recess appointment, and that attorney general doesn't fire Bob Mueller, but he just reduces his budget so low that his investigation grinds to almost a halt.
And he saw nothing wrong with Trump's son meeting a Russian lawyer who offered dirt on Hillary Clinton during the campaign.
I've run for public office twice, and you certainly want to have any advantage, any legal advantage you can.
But Robert Mueller retains his full authority as special counsel. He'll now have to clear all major decisions with Matt Whitaker.
Functionally, it means that Matt Whitaker will oversee Bob Mueller's investigation. If Mueller needs to do something or seek additional authority or get permission to charge, Mueller has to go through Whitaker.
Whitaker has authority to fire Mueller, but only for cause such as misconduct. No word tonight on Rosenstein's future. He was on the job today, attending a previously scheduled White House meeting. Pete Williams, NBC News, Washington.
Well, legal experts are now questioning whether Trump could legally appoint Whitaker. Harvard law professor Lawrence Tribe tweeted, "The Vacancy Reform Act bars Trump's installation of the unconfirmed Matt Whitaker to act as attorney general to control Robert Mueller unless Sessions truly resigned rather than being fired. A federal district court could be asked to see through the ruse and hold he was fired." That's, again, from Harvard professor, law professor Lawrence Tribe. Jeff Sessions' undated resignation letter to the president begins with, quote, "At your request, I am submitting my resignation." I don't know why it's so hard for me to remember that line. On Trump TV, also known as Fox, their senior judicial analyst, that's Judge Andrew Napolitano, he actually said that Whitaker's he said that he said that Whitaker's appointment might be illegal. This is Judge Napolitano.
Now, about Matt Whitaker, under the law, the person running the Department of Justice must have been approved by the United States Senate interim post.
Right.
Who is that person? Rod Rosenstein.
So it's not Mr. Whitaker.
Well, the president has taken Whitaker and promoted him above Rod Rosenstein. I don't know Whitaker's
Judge,
personal background.
I have a tweet. There's a tweet alert.
There's a tweet alert.
It is from President Trump. He says, "We are pleased to announce that Matthew G. Whitaker, Chief of Staff to Attorney General Jeff Sessions at the Department of Justice, will become our new Acting Attorney General of the United States. He will serve our country well. We thank Attorney General Jeff Sessions for his service and wish him well!" Exclamation point. A permanent replacement will be nominated at a later date.
Acting Attorney General Whitaker is a former United States attorney. Chris would know this better. I think Iowa. I'm not sure where.
I believe that's correct.
In that context, he was confirmed by the United States Senate, but he was not confirmed by the United States Senate for a leadership position in the Justice Department, and the statutes require that confirmation. The White House is going to have to work this out. Who has been confirmed and who's next in line? Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein.
Rosenstein! He's next in line. Anyway, Neil Katyal, who was a Solicitor General under Obama, and George Conway, that's, yes, Kellyanne's husband, both agree that Trump's appointment of the acting attorney general is unconstitutional, and they co-wrote an op-ed in the New York Times together to say just that. So what do we do? Well, the activist group Indivisible, in coalition with MoveOn.org, Demos, the ACLU, the Center for American Progress, Common Cause, and others are mobilizing this afternoon, 5 p.m. local time across the country, people taking to the streets to protest the crossing of a red line set to protect the Mueller investigation. Again, go to TrumpIsNotAboveTheLaw.org to find the event near you. Now, the president yesterday held a rare solo press conference during which he declared the election in which his party lost control of the House of Representatives a win.
I thought it was a very close to complete victory.
Ugh. He mocked a bunch of Republicans who didn't support him for losing their races, and he fought with the reporters who were there to ask him questions, once again berating CNN's Jim Acosta and calling him an enemy of the people. Acosta was asking why Trump called the caravan in Central America an invasion when the president went off the rails. I know you guys hate it when I play Trump audio, but I'm playing this segment because it's so important that you hear what this guy who's masquerading as the president of the United States did to a member of the media. It's just the behavior is unbelievable that this is how a U.S. president would act with the press. With anyone
made in the tail end of the campaign in the midterms. That this caravan was an invasion. As you know, Mr. President, the caravan was not an invasion. It's a group of migrants moving up from Central America towards the border with the U.S.
Thank you for telling me that.
And why did you characterize it as such?
Because I consider it an invasion. You and I have a difference of opinion.
But do you think that you demonized immigrants in this election to try to keep
them? I want them to come into the country, but they have to come in legally. You know, they have to come in, Jim, through a process. I want it to be a process. And I want people to come in, and we need the people. You know why we need the people, don't you? Because we have hundreds of companies moving in. We need the people.
Right. Your campaign had an ad showing migrants climbing over walls and
They weren't actors.
They're not going to be doing
that. They weren't actors. Well, no, it's true. Do you think they were actors? They weren't actors. They didn't come from Hollywood. Right. These were people. This was an actual, you know, it happened a few days ago. And
they're hundreds of miles away, though. They're hundreds and hundreds of miles away. That's not an invasion.
I think you should let me run the country. You run CNN.
Right.
And if you did it well, your ratings would be much better.
If I may ask one other question, are you worried?
That's enough. That's enough.
Mr. President, pardon me, ma'am. Mr. President, I had one other question, if I may ask, on the Russia investigation. Are you concerned that... That you may have
I'm not concerned about anything with the Russian investigation because it's a hoax. That's enough. Put down the mic.
Mr. President, are you worried about indictments coming down in this investigation?
Mr. President.
I'll tell you what, CNN should be ashamed of itself having you working for them. You are a rude, terrible person. You shouldn't be working for CNN. Go ahead.
I think that's unfair.
You're a very rude person. The way you treat Sarah Huckabee is horrible.
You
treat other people are horrible. You shouldn't treat people that way. Go ahead.
And then he goes to Peter Alexander of NBC News. Oh, my God. Well, last night, Jim Acosta was prevented from entering the White House by the Secret Service. That's when he discovered that the White House had pulled his press pass. In a tweet, Press Secretary Sarah Sanders falsely accused Acosta of, quote, placing his hands on a White House intern who tried to grab the microphone away from him. In that clip that I just played, you heard Jim Acosta say, "Pardon me, ma'am," as this woman, this girl, tried to grab the mic out of his hand. Well, Sanders also shared video in that tweet that was apparently deceptively edited by InfoWars. That's Alex Jones' media channel that now has been banned from YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, and just about any legitimate distribution channel because they're full of shit. This video didn't have any audio. It zoomed in on Acosta's arms and had its speed altered to make it appear as if Acosta aggressively brushed the intern's hand away. But there's tons of unedited video all over the internet, and you watch it, and you could see all Jim Acosta did was hold on to the microphone and pull it back. This girl is the one who was touching Acosta. It just sickening. And Sarah Sanders should be fired because she tweeted this shit out. Just saying. The White House Correspondents Association called the White House's actions unacceptable, while CNN said it stands behind Acosta and called Trump's attacks disturbingly un-American. Now, Acosta wasn't the only reporter Trump tangled with. He described as racist a question he got from Yamiche Alcindor, a PBS reporter who happens to be African-American, and he's saying her question was racist. It was a question about why he calls himself a nationalist. And then he yelled at reporter April Ryan to sit down as she tried to ask him a question. Unreal. This is gaslighting. This is exactly what gaslighting is. They're telling you the sky is green. We know it's blue. By the way, Justice Ruth Ginsburg is in the hospital. She broke three ribs in a fall last night. She went to the hospital this morning, was admitted for observation and treatment, but apparently she's doing just fine because Ruth Bader Ginsburg is a superstar. Or a superhero, I guess I should say. My husband, when I mentioned this to him this morning, he said, why wasn't she in bubble wrap? I think we need to make Ruth Bader Ginsburg a suit out of bubble wrap. All right. There's a whole bunch more. Basically, four more House races have been won by the Democrats. First-time candidate Lucy McBath, I told you about her. She beat Karen Handel, the one who beat John Ossoff in a special election. You know what? Somebody just asked in the YouTube chat room, if we can, you know, hold hearings on Sarah Sanders. Actually, the Democrats should, because she's lying. She's presenting fake information in form of a deceptively edited video, and claiming that Jim Acosta accosted this intern, and he did no such thing. All right, so Democrat Andy Kim declared victory in New Jersey's third against Republican Tom MacArthur. He's the multimillionaire former insurance broker who negotiated the House legislation to repeal the Affordable Care Act. In New Mexico's second, Sochi Torres Small was declared the winner. She's the granddaughter of immigrants, immigrant farm workers. Only the second Democrat elected from that district in 40 years and the first woman ever elected from that district. And Katie Hill beat right-winger Steve Knight in California's 25th, once a strongly conservative district in the high desert outside of L.A. And that's, a bit of what's news. We'll take a very quick break and come back on the other side with Marcy Wheeler. What? Oh, I've got somebody on hold. Hi, who's this?
This is Jason from Simi Valley.
Hey, Jason. I'm sorry. I forgot you were holding on. I didn't even realize it. But make it
quick. Yes, I'll be brief because okay. I tie in several threads that okay. you've been discussing. Okay. I'm out in Simi Valley, which is right next to Thousand Oaks. Thousand Oaks yep. is 6 miles down the road from me
right.
by the freeway.
Yep.
And we got up this morning. We heard that. Now, unfortunately, because of that event, tragic that it is, there was going to be a rally over in Westlake, which is right next mm-hmm. to Thousand Oaks,
right.
for the thing at 5 o'clock tonight, which got canceled for safety reasons.
Right.
However, I am going to trek into Sherman Oaks for those that, I think you have some familiarity with
Los Angeles. Oh, yes, I do, of course.
Yeah, so I'm going to trek down there for this thing today about Mueller. I just want to say that I am, as you know, I'm a fan of the show, and I want you to also know that don't get too dour. I think, personally, Robert Mueller, by every account I've seen, is a smart guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at the guy who they're trying to put over him right now, he doesn't look that smart.
No, he really doesn't.
And also, I think there is a big question if this guy can take the job. I think when you have Napolitano saying it's not kosher, then you know you got a problem. And I believe what we're seeing right now is a man panicking, desperate to try and save himself, but he's only going to be making it worse. So before you get, I know you have a propensity sometimes to get dour. This you do,
yep.
but that's okay.
Look, it's Florida. I'm upset about what our state did, and actually also upset about what's going on in Arizona, where they're also having massive counting problems.
Yes, well, let's put it like this: Florida, which I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I see Bugs Bunny saw it off, I do smile. But I want to say this much: it's possible Florida could turn around. It is very possible.
Yeah, it is.
And also over in Georgia, that's incredibly fluid.
That's right.
That could go her way. So I am saying to you, there was a wave. I will also tell you, and this may make you smile, you know what the wave was made of?
What?
Estrogen.
Yes, it was.
Because women won in overwhelmingly.
That's right.
So as I know you're going to your next guest, I just want to say that a lot of things are going on. But I just have this sense, this feeling, that things are changing a bit. And as it gets closer to the Democrats taking the House,
mm-hmm.
this guy is going to do more dumbass stuff.
Oh, without
yes.
a doubt.
And then the problem is, there's another podcaster who you may know, Bob Seska. He has a great mm-hmm. quote: "Trump always makes things worse for Trump."
That's true.
And that's all too true. And I want you to keep cheerful, girl. I need you. I need you on this podcast.
I will do my
best. Don't you go anywhere, girl.
I will do my best. All right, Jason. Thank you for calling. Always good to hear from you. All right. Let's just get Marcy Wheeler on the line. I'm not even going to take a break. You know what to do. All right. So let's call Marcy Wheeler. Marcy Wheeler, as you know, is an independent journalist. She writes and covers national security and civil liberties at emptywheel.net and has been writing about the constitutional crisis that we are in, courtesy of Trump's firing of Attorney General Jeff Sessions. All right. I'm calling Marcy. There she is. Hello.
Hi there.
There you are. Marcy Wheeler, thank you so much for joining us today. What a crazy time we're living through, huh?
Oh, man.
You know, I've been saying that this seems to be a constitutional crisis. And I see all these elected officials saying we're on the verge of a constitutional crisis. We're nearing. It seems like we're already in one, aren't we?
I think we are. I think that Whitaker is playing it coy for now. Right. So you already explained it's Matt Whitaker is the acting attorney general, a flunky who was kind of brought in to undercut the Mueller investigation. And Mueller was in court today, or his attorneys were in court today, arguing regarding a subpoena that one of Roger Stone's associates is challenging.
Right. That's
so
Andrew Miller,
they're still
right?
operating. Mm-hmm. And the special counsel spokesperson still says no comment every 10 minutes. So we know they're alive. So long as we continue to get those no comments, we know they're still there. But yeah, I think it is a constitutional crisis. I think that Whitaker will try and delay real controversy, but I don't know that Whitaker is prepped for what he's going to have to deal with. And, you know, he may be trying to get through, certainly this weekend, mm-hmm. where Trump is or maybe is going to meet with Vladimir Putin again, uh-huh. And then fire Mueller next week. But what if Mueller says, okay, I'm ready to indict Roger Stone on Friday? Then what happens?
Yeah, good question. And Trump is leaving Friday to go, I guess it's to Paris, where he allegedly may meet with Putin or not. Whitaker, I mean, it's obvious to me why Trump chose Whitaker to be the acting attorney general, because Whitaker, who was chief of staff for Jeff Sessions as attorney general, was acted for a while as a commentator on CNN, where he had been very open about the fact he thought the Mueller investigation went too far. He thought it was unconstitutional. I mean, he's basically he's outed himself as a Trump lackey. And he even said to somebody that that's why he took the job on CNN, so that he could endear himself to Trump.
Right. And he said he wanted to get a judicial appointment back in Iowa, which is
right.
where he's from.
That's right.
But, you know, so I could see him having agreed, because both Trump and Whitaker seemed to know that Whitaker was going to not recuse in this case. And we can get to why he probably should recuse. But they both seemed to know that he wasn't going to recuse. Trump knows that he's on the record as saying that Mueller's activities are unconstitutional or out of scope or what have you, which again is why he was picked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it's an attempt to shut down the Mueller probe.
Now, you wrote, Marcy Wheeler is with us. You wrote a piece, a very prescient piece for the New Republic last week, titled "If Trump Fires Mueller." You got the election predictions pretty spot on. The Democrats will control the House. The Republicans picked up a couple of Senate seats. But after floating the possibility,
wait, I have to interrupt there and yeah. say, once we finish the recounts in Florida and Arizona, I'll mm-hmm. be spot on.
Yes.
So I just want to say, I mean,
you're right.
Exactly.
There you go. Yeah, I told you, a very prescient post. So after floating the possibility that Trump could fire Mueller, the next scenario is that Trump could convince Jeff Sessions to resign, which I guess is what he did by Jeff Sessions starting his resignation letter by saying, you know, per your request. But I thought it was.
Well, can I interrupt
yeah,
you there, too?
Please.
I think that Democrats in the House with Dianne Feinstein, but particularly with all important House Judiciary Committee, mm-hmm. I think they have questions about whether what happened counts as a firing or a resignation.
Of course.
And that's actually important because we assume, and this has not been communicated publicly, but we assume that Whitaker was appointed under the Vacancies Reform Act. And you can appoint a senior, and he qualifies, a senior DOJ official who's been there for 90 days, even if he's not confirmed,
okay,
even if he hasn't been Senate confirmed, and he can serve in that capacity for 210 days.
Okay.
If the person you're replacing
resigned. Right.
But if he was fired, then you can only replace the person with a Senate confirmed
person. So he could put someone else from his cabinet in there who'd already been confirmed by the Senate. But Whitaker has not been confirmed for a position at DOJ.
Right. So he'd have to move over somebody like Steve Bradbury, who used to be OLC head and is now general counsel for Department of Transportation. Or he's also talked about Health and Human Services.
Uh-huh.
Alex Azar. Yeah, so either of those have been floated and could do the work, but they may not be as reliable hatchet men as Whitaker seems like he will be.
Right. And actually, if they went through the line of succession, it would have been Rod Rosenstein. He was next. He's the deputy attorney general. By definition, that's the person who steps up and takes the attorney general job when he leaves. Trump jumped over him. Do we have any hints about Rod Rosenstein's future?
No, and it's interesting because he kind of floated that he might be resigning in the next 48 hours.
Oh, God.
And so we'll see whether, say Mueller says, okay, I want to indict Roger Stone tomorrow, and Whitaker says no, then I could see Rosenstein resigning and bringing a bunch of people with him.
Right.
Or something like that. He may even say, again, there are two reasons Whitaker should recuse according to DOJ guidelines. The first is that he made all of these comments saying, not only saying that the Mueller probe was improper, but also saying, oh, sure, it was okay for Don Jr. to take that meeting with a bunch of Russians to accept the dirt on Hillary Clinton. Everyone would do that.
Right.
So he's already, he came into this probe with preconceptions about how it should go, and that's improper. But the other reason is that he served in 2014 as the campaign manager for a guy named Sam Clovis.
Right.
And Clovis was in charge of – he was actually in charge of the let's make policy more friendly to Russia.
Oy.
He's the guy who hired Carter Page, and he testified before the grand jury. So he is a key witness in this investigation, and DOJ guidelines are very specific about if you've got political ties to somebody like that, that they need to recuse, which is why Sessions needed to recuse. Now,
right.
He should be going through that kind of consulting right now. But the question is, what happens if Mueller has a big decision to make tomorrow? Again, the Roger Stone indictment.
Right. That's a good question. There's a question as to what Trump currently has access to in terms of the investigation. We know that Mueller's office is mum, that there aren't leaks coming out of Mueller's office. What I'm reading tells me that with Whitaker in place as acting AG, he'd have the authority to share information about wiretaps and grand jury proceedings and other stuff that Trump doesn't have access to now. Whitaker has the authority to share that stuff with Trump, doesn't he?
Yeah. Trump so far has relied on witnesses. So he claims he's still getting updates from Paul Manafort. It's not clear that that's true, but he's always relied on assuming he knows who all the important witnesses are, mm-hmm, and figuring out what they have to say. There is a 2002 memo that Jay Bybee wrote. We can't get rid of the decisions these crappy lawyers wrote, 16 years ago. But that memo said that in national security cases, any lawyer, frankly, but certainly the attorney general or the acting attorney general, can share grand jury information with the president or his direct reports, yada, yada. And so the idea was, say you've got a terrorist and you need to know. I mean, this is why I think it happened. I think this happened with regards to the Padilla case, is that probably somebody shared information on Jose Padilla in 2002 with George Bush so he could decide whether he wanted to do a military commission or an actual trial. But the notion is, and this the decisions go back even further, that, you know, in a case like with Mike Flynn, where there are concerns that the person is being compromised by a foreign country, you need to be able to tell the president. You need to be able to say, your national security advisor, we think, is making secret agreements with the Russians. Turned out that, you know, those were agreements that Trump had ordered.
Right. Okay.
So in that case, or in the case of pardons, like, do you want to give a pardon to Paul Manafort? We need to tell you that Paul Manafort has been in bed with a bunch of Russians for the past 20 years. So that's the kind of scenario that DOJ had laid out justifying it. But there are no limits, because with the president, there never are. And so Whitaker, yeah, he could go start sharing everything about the grand jury with Trump, and may do that. You know, one of the things that's interesting is Trump got his open book test from Mueller, rather than sitting and answering questions. Trump got a bunch of questions back in October to answer, and he's been stalling on them like a C student that he is. Right. And he says he has to take until Tuesday after he meets with Vladimir Putin, and probably after he gets a briefing from Whitaker about what's actually going on and what the right answers are. Before he'll turn in these answers. So that's an example where getting a briefing from Whitaker would change the investigative outcome.
Right. Now, Marcy, CNN is reporting that Mueller's team has begun writing its final report, citing, quote, multiple sources telling CNN. Mueller, from everything I've heard and understand, Mueller doesn't leak. So do you think that that's legit news, or is this just more, you know, nonsense?
Look, I think that those reporters on that team, they are as well-sourced as anybody on the DOJ side. So, yeah, it's quite possible that they know from people in DOJ. I think that people continue to mistake what function a report would have. And what was new on that is they described Mueller explaining declination. So, you know, we know that Mueller's been investigating Roger Stone for 9 months straight. If Roger Stone wasn't charged, Mueller would want to give an explanation for why, even though we think that he was in communication with WikiLeaks and the Russians, why he wasn't charged, why the evidence against him wasn't strong enough to charge him. Or more likely even still is, you know, I could see Don Jr. getting charged for that June 9th meeting, but Kushner not, because Kushner got up and left before any agreement was made.
Right.
And so they said that that was one function of the report. And that's interesting, because that suggests that Mueller envisions it being public and being publicly released to give confidence in the non-charging of Trump people. And in that case, you would expect Trump to want it to be released. That said, I have argued all along that Mueller has been setting up speaking in indictments and plea deals. And even the way in which he rolled out Manafort's plea deal, you would expect some follow-on about how they ran the campaign against Hillary. The GRU indictment, you would expect some follow-on. There are details in there that are not filled in, that you would expect to be filled in. And, for example, how the Podesta emails got to WikiLeaks.
Yeah.
So I think that people mistake the degree to which Mueller is thinking exclusively in terms of reports. But I also think, and I wrote that prescient piece, thank you very much, in the New Republic, I said one of the functions of a report, regardless of whether Mueller is able to make it public or not, is to share information with HJC. So if HJC, so say, for example, you can't indict Trump, right? But say Mueller has found evidence that Trump has abused his power, maybe not broken the law, but abused his power by making deals with Russia that undercut Obama before he was president. Then you would want to refer that to HJC, because they are the appropriate party.
The House Judiciary Committee is HJC.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And that to my mind is one of the reasons the report exists. And I believe that people in HJC probably are thinking in those terms as well. So it may be the report never sees the light of day, but it does get sent to HJC.
Right. And now that the Democrats will be controlling all the committees, finally, you know, I would guess they want to see to it that the report is seen by the public. If the Republicans still controlled the Judiciary Committee and the others, we had no assurance that we would ever see the Mueller report in any form.
Well, again, we don't know. Maybe nobody gets charged.
Uh-huh,
you know,
true.
It's still totally possible that Mueller says, look, these are close cases. We think that, you know, they probably broke the law. I mean, it could be just like what we saw with Hillary Clinton, maybe,
right.
That a lot of people want them to be charged, but it's just not a case that you can prosecute, in which case you could see similar kinds of information, in which case, yeah, the Republicans probably would want that out there, except to the extent that it would, you know, stand as a basis to undermine Mueller, to mm-hmm. undermine Trump. We don't know. But yes, the assumption is that Whitaker would try and bury anything that is detrimental to Trump, that is detrimental to any of the Republicans, and so on.
Right. Now, I've got a clip that was from CNN of Whitaker talking about, it's 12 seconds, about one way to shut down the investigation would be to kill the funding for the investigation. Here's what he said.
Well, I could see a scenario where Jeff Sessions is replaced with a recess appointment, and that attorney general doesn't fire Bob Mueller, but he just reduces his budget so low that his investigation grinds to almost a halt.
And he was arguing that that's what they should do because he was against this, the whole investigation. He's a Trump lackey. But they can't do that because the budget for the Mueller investigation has already been set?
Yeah, so Mueller should be fine for the next, say, 3 months or so. He's already started devolving prosecutors back to their home offices. So I think Mueller, I don't think he can do it with budgetary means, partly before, and I spoke to somebody who's close to these questions today. He's pretty confident that you can't shut down Mueller at this point because he's
really
so close to being done.
Uh-huh.
Like, again, the only questions that Whitaker may be weighing in on, aside from prosecutorial ones going down the road, are one, can Mueller subpoena the president? Mueller doesn't need to subpoena the president. If Whitaker comes out against subpoenaing the president, that's going to get shared with the Judiciary Committee chair and ranking member, and they're going to publicize it, and they're going to hold hearings on it. But then the other question is, if Mueller is planning on indicting the conspiracy in chief, Whitaker could try and say no, but that comes with the risk that you know, you've got it would be a conspiracy that, say, would include Akhmetshin, right, who has said that he thinks he might get indicted at least on FARA grounds, on not registering as a foreign agent.
Okay.
And so you would be in this position where, to save Don Jr., you were not going after Russian influence agents here in the United States. And maybe Whitaker wants to do that, but that's the kind of choice that he might face in refusing to approve an indictment like that.
Right. Now, you mentioned what would happen if Mueller tried to indict Roger Stone on Friday. What about Don Jr., who's apparently been telling people he thinks he could be indicted?
Yeah, so both Don Jr. and Stone have said they think they could, they expect to be indicted. Stone says it would be bogus. Don Jr. says he didn't know that he was entering into conspiracy with Russia. I think in Stone's case, it's really interesting because Andrew Miller, who challenged a subpoena today, his lawyer said that Miller might have some exposure on campaign finance issues, which means that Stone is being investigated also for campaign finance, which it doesn't surprise me. And then Jerome Corsi. We're dealing with Jerome Corsi, Nicole.
I hear.
Oh my gosh. Jerome Corsi has like basically been hanging out with Mueller for the past 2 months, which suggests he might be operating under an immunity agreement or a plea deal or something. And when he first testified to the grand jury or to first interviewed, his lawyer said, we think that he avoided legal exposure, meaning that Stone invited him to do something and he chose not to participate in some kind of activity that even Jerome Corsi found illegal. So so two of Stone's associates have suggested that they might have had some legal exposure in hanging out with him.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think it's crazy to think that Roger Stone and Don Jr. might get indicted. But you never know these things. And who knows? Right.
Well, we don't know. And that's and my next question is, I saw you had a really interesting exchange with someone on Twitter earlier today. Tweeter said he's trying to relax and believe that Mueller's got this. And you responded by saying you're not certain he's got this, that the president has a breathtaking amount of power. What Mueller has is smarts and foresight. We shall see which prevails. That's I mean, I think a lot of us are just going, OK, Mueller's going to come through and this madness, this alternate universe that we're living in will somehow be fixed.
Yeah, I mean, I just think, you know, you never know. Look, you know, Mueller has been planning for this moment for a year.
Mm-hmm,
okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, and he's not a dummy and he knows how DOJ's bureaucracy works better than Matt Whitaker.
Yep.
And he's taken steps already that, the most obvious of which is, sending the investigation of Trump Org to Southern District of
right.
New York, the most powerful U.S. attorney's office in the country. And this is the investigation that actually might bother Trump even more than the Russian investigation, because it goes to the fundamental fraud that is the business model of the Trump family. And a lot of those charges could be bumped right down to the attorney general in New York State.
Yep.
But certainly the U.S. attorney, like the Trump's pick for U.S. attorney recused. And, you know, it's another question whether Whitaker also needs to kill the SDNY investigation, because that one, frankly, probably poses a far graver, a far more fundamental risk to the Trump family as a whole. And certainly
yeah.
Eric and Don are both exposed, and probably Ivanka as well. So all his kids, and his fortune, to the extent he has one,
right,
are I think at risk in that investigation. So right, that's the question: is what is, what happens to these investigations, and how much can Whitaker actually kill?
Right now, Whitaker can't kill something from the Southern District of New York, can he? I mean, Tish James, who's the new Attorney General of New York, tweeted something out yesterday that I saved. She wrote, "Nobody is above the law, not even Donald Trump. Forcing the nation's top law enforcement official to resign doesn't give him a free pass. It only raises suspicions. I want New Yorkers to know I'll hold those in power accountable and make sure the special counsel's work continues."
Yes.
That's encouraging.
There are a lot of these charges that can be sent to New York. And even, for example, Paul Manafort, if he were pardoned today, Paul Manafort, a lot of his charges would have venue in New York, and New York State could prosecute them. So,
mm-hmm.
And a lot of the charges against Michael Cohen and against the Trump kids, and frankly, against Trump himself.
Right.
Those all could be prosecuted in New York State. So I do think that if Whitaker fiddled too much with SDNY, they would get bumped right down to New York State, and so they would continue.
Right, and he's got no jurisdiction there. So that is a way that these people can be held accountable. Marcy Wheeler, thank you so much. I'm asking questions, especially that last one, about things we don't know. We just simply don't know yet. There's a lot of wishful thinking out there. I've got one more unrelated question for you, and that has to do with Sarah Sanders. So yesterday she tweeted out this video of the grabbing of the microphone by the White House intern at the press briefing from Jim Acosta. Sarah Sanders said that Jim Acosta put his hands on the intern, basically alleging that he somehow physically assaulted her. She shared a video edited by InfoWars that was just, you know, it was false. It was a fake video that she tweeted out to try to get her point across. Can she be held accountable for
and
that?
And to distract.
Yeah.
The whole thing was to distract from Democrats winning the House. And, mm-hmm. of course, the margin of victory keeps going up and up.
Yes,
and up.
It does. I know White House press secretaries lie, but this goes beyond the pale. I just think she should
be ousted.
I agree.
I think it's new. I think it is a new, egregious precedent, and we'll see what comes of it.
Okay.
It's clear propaganda coming right out of the White House.
Yes, it is. And propaganda is illegal, as far as I know. Marcy Wheeler, find her at emptywheel.net, on Twitter at emptywheel. Marcy, your work is just invaluable. Thank you so much for all you do.
Thanks so much, Nicole.
Take care. Bye-bye. All right. And with that, we're done for the day. Tomorrow, Greg Sargent of The Washington Post will be here. He's got a new book out that I have not had a chance to read. I'll be cramming tonight. But Greg Sargent is daily reading for me. So I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening, everyone. Have a great day.